Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I could go to a Westworld-like fictional park, I would go to the world of Hogwarts, some sort of magical boarding school where I could do things like learn and cast magic and not die.
Wow, I went to Hogwarts world and I learned. Okay, my name is Joanna Robinson. And if I were to go to some fictional world run by the nefarious Delison Corporation, I would go to Discworld, Terry Pratchett's fantastical land of dwarves and elves and wordplay.
Oh, wordplay. Wow. And I'm Neil Miller. And if I were to go to any fabricated worlds created by the Delos Corporation, I'm going to Jurassic Park because it's the safest way to visit Jurassic Park.
Where nothing can possibly go wrong.
Because, you know, the whole hook would be the dinosaurs can't hurt you. And I would be the guy who'd be like, cool, sounds legit. And then I'd be there during the dinosaur robot uprising, which would also be cool. I mean, if you're going to go, getting eaten by like a T-Rex is a pretty good way to go.
Well, being eaten could be part of the experience, but then like a technician would have to come and retrieve you at some point. It's like walking around in this robot set.
They just pull you out of the T-Rex.
If you were to die in Jurassic Park world via dinosaur.
Oh my God, Jurassic Park world.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
How would you die? I feel like maybe, with much love, Neil, you might go out like Gennaro on the toilet.
Oh no.
Okay.
I would how'd you go? I would definitely go out
Muldoon style?
No. Also no. I would probably fall down something.
Nedry.
I would go Nedry style, okay. For sure.
I just want to have rules enforced on my life again, so I'm not wandering in some aimless direction. I feel like structure and magic, those two things there.
But here's the question about that is like, so can the Westworld science and technology people, can they make magic happen? Or is it just things that humans can already do?
Wait, you're saying have they discovered magic at this point in my
Westworld? Yeah.
Or is there like a simulation of magic?
Is a simulation? Is it like it's
basically,
real
Neil,
magic?
You're saying couldn't you just Dave Gonzalez right now go to Universal Studios and have the exact experience you're asking for? Yes, maybe. Maybe I could.
Yeah, probably. I want to go somewhere
have
where
sex
it's
with a gay girl.
I want to go they're somewhere not where it's dangerous.
They have a cave troll.
But it's not dangerous because they're robots. I think that's the whole point of Westworld, I think.
Well, I mean, if we're I do like your adventure idea, but if we are talking about places that we could go and have sex with things, then I'm definitely not on Jurassic Park World's side. That just seems confusing and painful.
Have we talked already about how both Jurassic Park and Westworld have a smart black man named Arnold in them?
We haven't talked about anything yet because this is the introduction to our podcast, Storm of Spoilers. This week we're going to be talking about Westworld. We're both answering some questions from you and speculating about the future of season two as we're going to talk about the first four episodes for sure. And then everything beyond that's going to be well-informed speculation with a few disclaimers later on. But before we do that, Joanna, do we have any reviews?
Hey, we got some international reviews. What fun. I'm going to read a few international reviews that we got in. Please forgive any and all accent work. this first one comes from Orestes Tilmit from Spain. But for our purposes, like, let's just pretend it came from Dorne, okay? And then we won't get mad about my accent, all right? Anyway, this review is 2 stars, so I don't care too much about what Orestes thinks of me. Not so educated. Not so educated. All right. wait, Neil, do the Dorne accent.
What? Oh, now I can't remember a line.
Oh, terrible. Okay.
This is not a monster. This is a baby.
They tend to base their opinions on feelings, which is not a bad thing per se, but those feelings usually come from not knowing very well the source material. For example, they talk about how they feel about Hugo Weaving being in Avengers Infinity Wars, although he is not in it, or they debate about plot points that were touched upon in the movie if they weren't. Again, not a bad thing in itself, but at the end of the day, you won't get anything new from the podcast. Very good if you tend to have a contrarian opinion and don't want to feel alone. And I have to say, like, my terrible accent aside, and I apologize to all of Spain, but I don't mind if we're the podcast that for people with a contrarian opinion don't want to feel alone, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's like the point of the Our Infinity War episode coming out immediately after the movie did.
And I will say about the Hugo Weaving thing, like, in our defense, most people didn't know. Well, I guess Dave and I could have paid closer attention to closing
credits. We recorded it, and then the news came out, and we were like, oh, yes, of course.
The news came out after we recorded. Yeah, the news came out after we recorded the episode, though. Like, Dave and I sat in a theater and watched the closing credits, and we didn't, like, look to see who was playing Red Skull. And we could have done that. That's one thing we could have done, but we didn't do it. So live and learn and do better when we do our solo episode. Okay. This one comes from.
did we do better on?
Yeah, we
watching the credits on
we
Solo.
We looked at the credits for Solo. Okay, this one.
I know there's one question we still have, but we'll leave that for later.
This review comes from JJosh_H, from Canada. preemptive apologies to all of Canada. Amazing cast, amazing show, amazing topics. I love this podcast. It is a great group of people that put a lot of work into recapping and reviewing the material they're talking about. I don't always love their recap choices in the off season, but I still love to drop in when it's something I'm interested in. They're really on top of what's new and hot, but that also means I got a huge backload of shows to listen to after I finally have time to watch whatever it is they're discussing. So that's my terrible Canadian accent.
It's very Fargo-y.
Yeah, well, they're close, man.
It's basically the same thing.
Southern Canada is close to Fargo, so I'm just saying. Anyway, those are our reviews. I mean, I have one more negative review.
Oh, is this the one that was promised earlier last week?
Yeah, but I'm only going to read it if you don't get frosty about it. Don't get frosty.
Okay. All right. I won't.
Cold day in hell. Don't get frosty. Wayne 1906, 3 stars. Great in season, bad off season. I want to start by saying that I've listened to the podcast for a couple of years. This particular off season tour has not been great. I know that I'm just one opinion, but I think the topics this off season have not been relevant to the great TV and movies we currently have out. Over the last 8 episodes, I've only made it through 2. Again, just my opinion, but to have another podcast on Tremors was it for me. I'll tune back in when Game of Thrones begins again. So, sorry to hear that, Wayne 1906. We'll see you in season 8. I actually think we have been hitting a lot of populist stuff, and we certainly will be hitting a lot of populist stuff going forward. The next few episodes, I think, are pretty popular. But
is this about Tremors? Feels like it's about Tremors.
It feels literally about like Tremors. It's about
he
Tremors.
Literally said Tremors.
Man, come on.
That was
we did
the reaction.
Two Avengers episodes.
I was going to have.
I know. I told Dave he wasn't allowed to speak his mind. But anyway, those are all.
Oh,
of
sorry.
Our Thank you for your review on this episode you're not listening to.
That's it.
That's as salty as I'm going to be. Okay. Neil.
Yes.
Your section is called, we talked about this already, where we usually plug this thing that we're doing next week.
Yeah. Yeah, Con of Thrones. We've been talking about it for so long, and it's like next week. So that's a big deal. If you're heading to Dallas, come and see us. Our panel, our live Storm of Spoilers, this podcast, but live, will be on Friday. It will be spoiler free because you never know the kids are in the room or whatever. You don't want to spoil stuff.
not for the children. So this is yeah, worst no,
we,
of all.
We don't want to hurt the children.
Well, nobody so... think of the children. So we're like at a Game year. Of Thrones convention.
So just like last year, it'll be spoiler free. We're going to do some fun stuff. We'll talk about spoilers. And that'll be fun. We're also doing a bunch of panels for the Great Debates like we did last year as well. We are also doing fun panels with celebrity people. Dave and I will be hanging out with Kate Dickey, who played Liza Aaron. Joanna will be with, what's his name?
How dare you? Joe Dempsey.
Joe Dempsey. Gendry.
Never
himself.
Heard of him.
Yeah, never heard of him. I actually think he's going to be the big draw. So this is the first salvo in my quest to constantly remind Joanna that it's going to be the most full panel possible at Con of Thrones.
Yeah,
so that'll be fun.
That worked so well on me at South by Southwest.
Yeah. One of these times I'm going to get her. But yeah, so next week we'll all be together. It'll be great. And we'll be at Con of Thrones. So if you're going to be there, awesome. Come say hi. We're cool. I'll be walking around with Dave and Joanna. It we're easy to find. It's not hard. So that'll be fun. We do have a little game.
Two of us are tall. One of us has purple hair. There's always three of us. So
you can... Right. Right. Dave has pretty good facial hair for a villain.
That's right.
Yes. There's also some Game of Thrones things that we need to talk about. And I'd like to play a little game. I don't know. I checked the internet. I checked vanityfair.com to make sure Joanna had not written about this yet. Because I really want to get to the meat of this situation. And the situation is that there are many cast members who have been spotted in Seville, Spain. And that is where they're filming what we are told is some dragon pit-ness. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting roster, and it's not everyone. It's also some people that we haven't heard from in a while. So if you're worried about potential spoilers, I would skip ahead a minute. If you're not worried about potential spoilers, it may also not matter, because here's the big question. The question is, are all of these people at the Dragon Pit, or are all of these people showing up for the rap party? Because here's the list of people, characters, according to Watchers on the Wall, who have been seen in Seville. And I'm just going to read their character names, because that's what I'm doing. But Jon Snow, Bran Stark, interesting, Sansa, Arya, Davos, Brienne, Sam Charlie, Gendry, Robin Arryn, Varys, Ser Jorah Mormont.
Wait. Robin Arryn could make it to the end?
That's the question.
The prince
here.
Who was promised.
It would definitely justify all the time we spent with him.
Azor Ahai
I would definitely have
himself.
Not seen it coming.
Moving on to the rest of the list. Jorah Mormont, Yara Greyjoy, Grey Worm, Tyrion, Jaime, Cersei, the Night King, and the faces of Jaqen and the Waif. So the actors who played Jaqen and the Waif. Curiously missing, although not so curiously in this case, is Emilia Clarke, who we know is currently doing press for the Star Wars movie she's in, so I don't think that's necessarily relevant.
What is relevant? I think her absence is relevant in that, like, if they're doing something important right now, they did it during a time when they knew Emilia Clarke could not be there. Like, if they're filming something, they
that
did it
sense.
In the week where she's like, I'm going to the Met Gala, I'm going to the LA premiere of Solo, I'm going to Cannes Film Festival, you know. And so, like, if they're filming stuff, it's stuff they could film without Emilia Clarke in it. Unless she's on a dragon circling around up above, you know.
Yeah, okay. And then some other people who are not there. Miss Sandy is not there. Qyburn, the Mountain. Theon, my beloved Tormund, Ser Bronn, Podrick, and then pretty much everybody who I haven't said yet is not there. So the question is are people gathering for the rap party, or is this who makes it to the end?
Robin Aaron!
or are some of these people just on vacation?
So there's a few fun theories about this. Okay, so one is that HBO has paid a bunch of its actors to just hang around Spain to confuse the likes of us. That's a fun idea. The other is someone suggested to me that perhaps not just a rap party, but that they're maybe shooting some like behind the scenes, like sit on a chair and give an interview for the camera to use for extra features. And they're doing it specifically there so that it will be confusing to people. That's another possibility. Third possibility, yes. Especially with Faye Marseille and Tom, who plays Jack Nagar.
I know this one. Walisha.
Well, ooh, really?
Great. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's because I listened to the commentary tracks and they had to introduce him.
Walisha. Oh, I thought that was a V. That's great. Okay. Jack Nagar and the Waif, like, to me, that means that, like, Arya is going to be doing some face shit. Like, if there's a scene being filmed there, it's possible. And we all know that, like, the show does not give a fuck about, like, the actual logistics of face swapping Game of Thrones. And so, like.
You mean mass conservation, Joanna?
So, like, you know, you would think that Arya would need to have all these people's faces in a bag in order to use their faces. You know what I mean? Like, when she went blind a couple seasons ago, like there were faces being pulled that weren't off of dead people. I don't know. Point being.
Right. She had like a trip.
Yeah.
Like so, she was being poisoned and she was sort of losing.
Yeah, she was tripping out. And so there's a difference between that and like the bag of rubber faces that Sansa found under her bed last season. But, you know, the point being like, Arya could do some like crazy mindfuckery shit with like a whole bunch of faces of a whole bunch of different characters, like in a
Robin Aaron,
including the most Robin Aaron. Robin Aaron.
That or one would Night be King. Mass conservation. So now I'm on Team Robin Aaron.
Yes, I think it's like the same hair too, actually. So yes. It won't make me like worry about wigs either.
So, well, and the guy who played Jaqen or the kindly man or, you know, the stranger, whatever, that character's still alive. She didn't kill that character. She only killed the waif.
Yeah, I know.
So that's, I guess, I just can't think of a reason why he would need to show up in a dragon pit or in King's Landing as it's being attacked. The Night King is also very interesting to me because what we thought.
That dude's dead. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, they're filming. Well, what I do know is they're filming out of order also.
Yeah, that's true.
They're filming the whole thing out of order. So like this has no bearing necessarily on endings. If Weiss and Benioff are there like directing, then it's the finale. I think that's what people are sort of using to pin it as the finale.
Right. Weiss what director is there? Yeah.
The finale. But, you know, they've already, I've been told that they've already filmed the ending. So, this would be.
Well, and that makes sense, depending on where the ending takes place.
Right.
The question, though, is why would the Night King need to be that far south?
So that Arya can wear his face. I don't know.
Well, maybe.
I don't have an answer.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So they're paying actors to hang around in like different countries. They know they could just pay us to not say anything, right? Like, we're not journalists. I will take money to shut up about Game of Thrones.
Sometimes a journalist.
I feel like that would only work on one and a half of us.
Yeah,
like half of me is like, yeah, I'd take the money.
Definitely pay off, Dave.
Yeah, and I have all sorts of swing with other people, according to me on this podcast. So give me money.
You are the one who edits it. You could, if they really wanted to get to somebody, they could get to you and you could just cut parts out.
Yeah. And then like all I'd send a whole bunch of emails back to Joanna being like, I don't know what happened. I'm sorry.
It's messed up. Stupid.
It's glitching. It's what a crazy glitch.
Doesn't sound like anything to me.
Yeah, no, it looks crazy. Look at my new car, by the way. I got a Tesla.
Wow.
Anyway, so we'll wait. I think we'll wait till we know more about what they're actually filming, or until people are seen in costume on set, because but you know maybe they are. It does sound like a nice place to go on vacation, according to Maisie Williams's Instagram.
For sure. I am very envious of anyone who vacations in Europe usually. And speaking of places to vacation, we are on to our topic, Westworld. Westworld, in case you haven't been watching this season, is back for a second season that picks up sort of where the movie Westworld, Michael Crichton's film, started, which is the robot uprising is definitely underway. First season was a sort of a season about the robots glitching and time being rearranged to sort of fool the viewer into some character identity shenanigans. Season two looks to be doing something similar, but we're only four episodes in, and it also looks to have some bigger ideas on its mind, like anything that involves immortal robots that could be rebooted and wiped and take some serious damage. And as we saw in season one, their blood is basically interchangeable. What if you applied that to a human seems to be where Westworld is bending in season two, at least in these first four episodes. So we're going to be discussing some details about that, as well as answering some of your questions. How's this first season or the second season going for you guys so far? I mean, it feels dumb to ask Joanna that because she does two other running podcasts about Westworld. So I'm assuming she likes it. So let's ask Neil, how's it going so far?
Yeah, I'm super confused. Okay. That's it. I'm just super confused about stuff.
Are you enjoying it at all? Like, in your confusion, are you, like, having fun?
Sort of.
Okay.
I like that it's thrown me for a loop. There's all kinds of weird stuff happening in season two. We are expanding beyond the initial park, which I thought, you know, obviously everybody's sort of into that idea. But yeah, I don't know if I have a good grasp yet on what is really at play here. Like, the stakes of Westworld don't quite make sense to me yet. Like, is it as simple as the robot uprising? Like, the robots are trying to escape and take over humanity, and it's like prequel to Terminator? Or are there like a million other weird things going on with all of the different parties involved? And I think that season two has further complicated it. It's not getting any more simple to follow. So I am curious to sort of see how that plays out. I'm curious to hear you guys explain a lot of it to me. I think that they are setting themselves up for a lot of very interesting, I don't know. They're setting themselves a lot of narrative traps, it feels like. So it feels like it's kind of in a weird place where it could get really messy if they don't stick the landing.
How far back in your television watching history do you think you could go before you would have recognized what they're getting into as narrative traps? Like, is this purely a post-Lost phenomena or a post-Lost mystery show phenomena?
Yeah, it definitely feels like a Lost thing. Like, and I guess it depends on how you see the end of Lost, but you can start to see, like, if you go back and rewatch Lost again, in that, like, third and fourth season, like, that's the sweet spot for Lost, and then after that, they just bit off way more than they could chew, and they sort of skidded to the end. So I don't know if that's happening with Westworld because it's way too early, but I am enjoying the performances. I do enjoy the characters. I enjoy the violence. And this season, I'm enjoying some of the surprises. So yeah, I guess it's one of those things where I keep watching, even though I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work.
Joanna, for you, I guess, as somebody that is lived through this age of, you know, mystery television, but I think also something as far back as like the Harry Potter series or any ongoing.
That far back? No, sorry.
That far back. There are generations today where that's their only reference for all comparisons. You know, any sort of serialized storytelling, I think there's a need for the fan base to feel like whoever's doing it has their hand firmly on the wheel. Do you feel like the Westworld creative staff and all their tomfoolery before the season, and then now being mid-season and about at the border of where they've given screeners to critics, has maintained that steady hand.
I do. Well, I think so. I think they started season one and changed their mind a little bit partway through and tweaked some things. And, you know, famously in the midway in season one, like, took, I think it was like four episodes into season one, something like that, like took a gap to really figure out what they wanted to do. And after that, James Marsden, when, you know, one of the stars of the show, said like, oh, now they have a plan through six seasons. I don't know if I necessarily believe exactly that or if they should even adhere exactly to that, if that's what they're going to do. But that being said, I think this season, I think in every season, they know where they're, what they're aiming towards and what they want to do. Do I think they changed their mind a little bit between season one and season two? I do. And I think they've bent a few things to fit that. But like, I don't feel a lack of confidence in their vision. And I think they're also smart enough to convincingly write themselves out of corners that they might have backed themselves into. This is like something the staff on Breaking Bad used to do for fun, which is like write themselves into corners and then see if they could get themselves out of it. And I think Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan and their writing staff are smart enough to handle that. So I do have confidence in them, you know, and Lost gets an extraordinarily bad rap for this, I think. But and Lost did flounder a little, and so did The Leftovers, and so has everything that Carlton Cuse has ever done. But there is enough strength of vision, I think, in all of, at the very least, Lindelof's stuff. I'm just preemptively like being defensive of Lost because it's getting shot upon anew with all the Western
no,
comparisons.
I like Lost.
Yeah.
I should say that up front. I just think I understand where people can see where they sort of... The question to me is, with Westworld, I think the thing with Lost is they told us for so many years, like, we know where it's all going. And it was kind of clear that they were sort of figuring it out as they went. So I'm curious if we feel like Westworld has, like, a full plan... Like, do the Nolans know where this ends?
I mean, I think they do have, like, a six-season outline, a la Harry Potter, that was written generations ago. You know, like, J.K. Rowling famously had, like, all seven books sort of, like, in filing boxes planned out. Are they allowed permutations on their way there? Yeah, I think so, you know? Like, I was told that the actor Jimmy Simpson, who plays the young version of Ed Harris's character, spoiler alert for Westworld season one, he told me at the end of season one that he was not coming back the next season. And then I was like, oh man, Jimmy Simpson lied to me because he's all over season two. But then I was told by someone that he actually thought he wasn't coming back and they weren't planning to bring it back. And then they sort of changed their mind. So all the young William stuff is stuff that they decided to lean into between seasons, and that's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I think they're yeah. beefing up, playing their strengths because the young William slash Jimmy Simpson stuff is interesting. I think so. You know, I have no problem with that. I feel very confident. I just think then Lisa Joy and Jonah Nolan are so smart. And I know Westworld also has a bad rap for being like not as smart as it thinks it is. And that might be true to a certain extent, but I think, you know, they're tremendously well-read, literate, interesting people that sprinkle a lot of fun philosophical ideas through their stuff. And do I think they get a little caught up in like the twisty mystery of their show sometimes? Yeah, they probably do, but it's fun to talk about, you know?
Yeah, and that's also sort of what the show is. So it's fine.
Absolutely. Dave, what do you think? What are your general broad Westworld feelings?
I mean, I like it as a show that you could talk about, and I think that's primarily its use to me. I see why people compare it to Lost a lot, because that was probably the last one that, on this scale, was about how well you could remember the show and if you could debate stylistic things about it versus things that were just random. You know, are the books on so-and-so's shelf important in that such-and-such flashback? Which is an enjoyable way to watch a show from week to week. I'm super happy that Westworld is airing in that fashion and isn't in like some sort of binge mode. But That being said, I think I was talking to Neil before we started recording. I think that it's not so much like they know where they're going as they build each season sort of as a whole and then let that play out so that each season feels like a complete little like pocket. Like there's some are some isolated plot points from season one that are, have been picked up in season two, but at the end of season one, I couldn't have necessarily told you exactly what those were going to be. And I certainly couldn't have predicted how they changed or how our understanding of them changed in season two, which makes me think they also didn't know for sure either. Westworld's been really interesting for me as somebody building a mystery show, but with the possibility of it having to continue afterwards. So they have their whole story, but it can't have an actual conclusion at the end of this season, even though that's how they're structuring it. So you see all these little pockets of places to go. In this case, it's going to be the other parks, but they're never going to, you know, like show us a map of all the different parks because those pockets are their escape hatches for being able to tell complete stories in a season.
That being said, swan stations.
Exactly. Or what are the already the Infinity Stations in season two of Westworld. So it's going to be, I think it's interesting, but the side effect of these things is that much like season one, I think the middle is going to lose the casual viewer because the middle is not designed for the casual viewer. This season does sort of like prove me wrong with the next episode, but outside of that, just through episode four, I feel like that's where we are. We're at the center. All the juggling balls are up in the air right now, and we're just like waiting to go over the hump and start watching them come down.
That's so funny because
all the oranges are in the air and the juice is in the oranges.
Sorry. That's a Los Angeles Day of Revelation. All right, so I slightly disagree in that I think at least with season two, the first three episodes were kind of hard for people to glom onto. And I think having seen episodes four and five, everyone's seen four, having also seen five, this is where Westworld is like really flexing its muscle, really showing what it can do as a show. Episode four, I mean, it's not a spoiler to say because we've seen trailers already, but episode five is like the Shogun World episode. And it's so like confident and splashy and bold. And then this episode, I'm calling the Jim Delos episode, whatever, just like, it had a lot of other things going on, but this looping reveal of the major, like a major conceit of the show revealed in such a fun and engrossing and entertaining way via the Jim Delos storyline, I think is once again, the show just like really flaunting what it can do. So I think, you know, if we were to take season one was a lot about us figuring out what Westworld even was as a show. And then season two, we're looking for that experience to somewhat be replicated. And I think in the first three episodes, at least for me, left me a little cold. But with episode four and five, I think episode four and five are better than anything we saw in season one. And I'm really excited to see them continue that ambition and confidence and budget going forward.
Into it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
We're going to stride into specific questions that you and Neil have. And that's going to involve some spoilery answers. So if you're not into season two, episode four of Westworld or up to it and want to catch up before we talk about it, press pause. We'll be here when you get back. Otherwise, forward. Neil questions are at the top of our list now.
Yeah, I have two big questions. Mm-hmm. Because the central mystery to me, and a lot of people have come out of this episode thinking, like, what's in the brown balls? Like, who's in the brown balls? That didn't even occur to me while I was watching it. What I'm concerned with is, like, what is Tessa Thompson's character trying to get out of the park, and what does that have to do with, if anything, the whole James Delos storyline? Because I feel like this, the idea of immortality, which is clearly what they're trying to accomplish with the James Delos characters, you know, all these different versions of him. I feel like those are two things that are completely different. Are those two different things?
I'm gonna let Dave take this.
Unless
you feel like you don't know the answer, and then I could take it. I just feel like I talk too much.
No. You should go first, because I think I have the answer, but I also don't talk about this as often as you do. I got to warm up with my Westworld theorizing.
Okay, so there's something underneath the top layer of the park. There is something secretive that not even like that Ford, Anthony Hopkins' character Ford, wasn't supposed to know about, that Bernard didn't know about, and it's called the Delos Project, which I wish it had a different name, but it's called the Delos Project. And it's marked by this sort of hexagonal infinity symbol that you've seen on the lab where Bernard and Charlotte went underground, and the lab where Bernard and Elsie found, like, in that cave. And the one that Charlotte and Bernard went to is number 14, and the one that Bernard and Elsie went to is number 12. So there's at least 14 of these secret infinity labs around the park. And what those labs are concerned with are a couple things. One is scraping DNA from the hosts of the guests who have visited the park and storing those. So they've got DNA of everyone who's ever visited the park.
Creepy.
Number two, harvesting they're called chestnuts, these little like eggs that are inside the guest's brain that are recording everything. So they've got DNA of the guests, and then I would say incriminating video of the guests, right? And then the third thing that they have not perfected but got close to with Jim Delos himself is this idea of uploading the developed mind into a host body to grant some kind of digital immortality. So those are the three things. All three of those things, I believe, are the proprietary IP, intellectual property, that Charlotte, Tessa Thompson's character, was worried Ford would somehow delete when they fired him, as they were planning to do at the end of season one. And so she uploaded that IP into a host who occasionally was known as Peter Abernathy in the park, Dolores' father, and tried to smuggle it out on a train last season because, you know, get that host on a train and get the IP out, basically turn him into a walking USB stick and get that IP out of the park. Unfortunately, Ford released all the robots who were in cold storage. Peter Abernathy was one of them. Before Charlotte and Lee Sizemore, her accomplice, could get him out of the park. So he's wandering around with all his precious IP in his glitching, malfunctioning robot brain. So Charlotte is trying to find him so she can get that IP out of the park. And I believe it is all the things. I believe it is the DNA, the surveillance video, and all the information about the immortality project. Mm.
Yeah, so that was the question is, is that sort of what is, was the project that William was doing about his father-in-law trying to do, was that separate from, you know, the park's general operations? Because it felt like that was like a secret thing that they were also doing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. All three of those things are secret.
So, and these are all things that the Delos Corporation or, you know, people like William and Charlotte were doing sort of behind Ford's back.
Right, which is why, for the most part, I mean, we saw some humans operating the Lab 14, or no, Lab 12 in this episode. But for the most part, drone hosts were manning these things so that they could be off the grid. And they thought they were off the grid from Ford, but Ford like made it really clear in season one that he knows everything that's going on all the time in his own damn park. So,
right.
I think the idea, it is possible that like Ford knew about it, but I think, because Elsie and Bernard don't know about it, like, I think the idea was that they were trying to do it without Ford knowing. But maybe he did know, because why else would they be worried that he would delete that IP if he didn't, like, know about that IP? But
and also, is it something where we could potentially get to a place where the reason why Ford did all of the things he's doing is, one, to show them that he knew what was going on, and two, to show them that he made a breakthrough that they could not have achieved. Is that kind of the idea there? Like, the whole reason why Ford is putting William through this game might have something to do with the fact that this Delos project was trying to do stuff behind his back.
Absolutely.
That's my theory.
No, that's definitely why he hates, one of the reasons why he hates William is that William, or seems to hate William, or at least wants to teach William some kind of lesson, is that William turned his park, which was one thing, into something, I think, more sinister than Ford ever intended it to be. And so he resents, I believe, because Ford has this God complex, he resents William sort of muscling in with the money to take control and sort of exact his own ideas of what they should be focusing on technologically going forward. And so the door thing, like, I want to say it's like Ford taking sort of malicious revenge on William. But that was a mistake we made in season one, thinking that Ford was acting maliciously when in fact he was trying to like educate Dolores in some way. So it's possible that once again, he's just trying to educate William about something, about himself, about the nature of humanity, et cetera, et cetera.
So that probably means that William is the other brown ball. Did I just solve the whole thing?
Well, first of all, they're red.
Oh,
burgundy.
Red, sorry. Yeah, they're brownish. I don't know. Maybe the color tint is up on my TV.
William is a possibility. There's a bunch of possibilities. Dave, do you want to run through like some of the possibilities of who people think? You know, so in episode four, we saw Bernard, through flashbacks, realize that Ford sent him to print what I've been told are called the pearls, which are these little balls that go inside the what are called chestnuts, the larger container that goes inside the people. They're red if they're human consciousness, and they're white if they're robotic. And so Bernard printed for Ford a red pearl. So the question that we're all asking ourselves is, what consciousness, human consciousness, did he put in there? Dave, what are your favorite theories?
My favorite theories, I was just going to go through a whole bunch of theories, but my favorite theory is that my favorite theories are it's his wife, William's wife,
Juliet.
Dark.
Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a Jimmy Simpson version of William, mm-hmm. but with old William's mind scan from at some point they took it from him in the park. The one that isn't, I don't like that one yet. Those are my two favorite ones. It could also be basically any other human that we've seen actually interact in the park. It's just a lot of that is a lot less interesting. I think it's less interesting if it's Ford. I think it's could be interesting if it's actual Arnold's, and that's who we're seeing wander around as like a dazed Bernard. But the only reason that isn't one of my favorite theories is a personal theory that I want this to be going in a dollhouse direction, not in a resurrection direction by the end. But we'll see. Joss Whedon's dollhouse.
Yes.
For people who didn't catch that reference.
Which is multiple personalities in one
in one robot.
One robot.
Person.
I was a fan of the Arnold theory. But now I'm like newly a fan of another theory, which is that Dolores, because she misses Arnold so much, has like put Arnold inside of Bernard, and that's why he's like so messed up, because he's like both Bernard and Arnold at once, and that's who we're seeing wander around.
So that's dollhousey enough.
Exactly.
I'm okay with
that's still dollhousey enough for you. But there's this whole theory that the first scene of the season, which we thought was maybe a flashback to Dolores and Arnold, is actually a flash forward to Dolores and that Dolores is pretending to be the innocent farm girl. When in fact she's guiding the conversation with Barnold, or Bernard, as people like to call him last season. My issue with the Juliet theory, even though it fits into a lot of themes of the season, which is like family and, we know that Juliet's death was a huge like emotional reckoning for William. We just don't know that character very well. You know, like they cast this model that they use in a stock photo in season one. And we've seen her once at a party scene, like give a sour expression and that's it. We don't know if that model is a good actress. We're not emotionally invested in her at all. If she were to show up now,
it would be like, very confusing for people like me.
Yeah. People like
I wouldn't Neil recognize or, her.
Yeah. Would go like, who? Exactly. So you know, Scott Beggs, who wrote up the Juliet theory for Nerdist, was trying to like sort of sway me to his thinking, and he convinced me about some things, but he and I both agreed that like the theory becomes more likely if going forward in the season we see more Juliet flashbacks, like if they fill in more Juliet backstory. But it feels kind of convincing in terms of like what it would mean for William's daughter who's with him now and all that sort of stuff. But I like
sort of the hole that it makes that her picture started the glitch that we thought was Ford. It'd be funny if Ford made Juliet the glitch that eventually kicked everything off.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a scenario, like, because I think this is a test for William, right? And I feel like whatever's on the other side of the door, be it a literal door or not, is something that he's going to have to decide. And I think the right decision is probably going to be to like destroy her, you know? And then that's going to be like a really painful and poignant thing for him to do if that were the case.
And especially now that his daughter is hanging out with him.
Yeah. And in which case, like she does, I guess that actress or that model does not have to do a lot of acting necessarily. She could just be like mute in a cage somewhere. And that's a very Nolan thing to do. Dead wives. The Nolans are huge fans.
The dead wives.
Yeah. So that's a whole thing, and so that's convincing. But I think the more like shocking, surprising, upsetting, interesting possibility for me, at least right now, is young William as played by Jimmy Simpson.
Do you think there's ever? And this actually reminds me of your tweet about the Nolans Thanksgivings or family dinners all being mm-hmm. weirdly cut together.
Yeah, Dave's tweet about that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Dave's tweet. Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's ever awkward conversations when the two couples are together? Because both of the Nolan brothers have very like extremely talented wives, creative wives, but for some reason they're really into telling stories about men with dead wives. I think that ever gets weird.
Yeah, no, if I were Lisa Joy, I'd be like, what's up with that?
Right. Or if you're Emma Thomas, be like, what is going on here, guys? Yeah. Why you keep killing all your main characters' wives?
I'd be more witty about it. I'd be like, with all your obsession on time, you're still late for dinner?
Wow.
I don't know why I'd have that accent.
You have a great accent. That's funny. Yeah. I think what it boils down to in terms of who's in that pearl is like what will be the biggest like holy shit reveal at the end of the season, and if
you think so,
if indeed they're revealing,
you don't think that's our like middle reveal?
Didn't we just have a middle reveal?
I think the pearl thing is equivalent to like a Bernard reveal, but I do think there has to be like some sort of penultimate.
Okay, but then that's episode 7, right? The Bernard reveal last season was episode 7.
Yeah, So like that's where we're going towards, but I think at the end we're building towards a Dolores Maeve something. Otherwise, what's Maeve doing?
Well, Maeve's going to have to make a choice about her daughter. I think they're all going to have to make choices about...
This brings up an excellent email.
Hit me.
Okay, so this email came from, this is about Dolores and Maeve, specifically. This is from Matthew. I'm just going to read it verbatim. I'm going to try. Remember that scene with Maeve and Dolores at the crossroads, that philosophical debate? This is the best example of the Dolores-Maeve dichotomy, of their understanding and response to their self-actualization. While Dolores has overt messianic aspirations, I propose that Maeve is the true messianic figure. Interesting stuff here. Theologian Marcus Borg writes that the pre-Easter Jesus, historical Jesus, was a spirit person or sage who shared an alternative wisdom, as sages do, contrary to the conventional wisdom of the day. for example, flaunting the authority of the temple and purity laws. I believe that Maeve, in using her freedom to find her daughter, whom she loves, is following an alternative wisdom. Dolores, much like other zealous messianic aspirants of the first century, is following a radicalized conventional wisdom. She's using her newfound quote-unquote humanity, for lack of a better word, to bring down judgment on her oppressors. Westworld is violence, a world without the beauty the rancher's daughter saw. Dolores has accepted that and is acting accordingly. Revenging Dolores while making her own choices is conforming to the cultural norms of Westworld, albeit on a much larger scale. If the center of the maze was consciousness, I believe that the other side of the door is where the consciousness meets itself, a place of reckoning with who and what you are. Dolores won't like what she sees. Neither will old William. Maeve will, because her actions were out of love. Remember, we only live as long as we're remembered. Quote, insert Anne Hathaway's Interstellar monologue here. So basically, the door is Murph's bookcase tesseract. So I think this is a really interesting take on why Dolores and Maeve are sort of these two parallel things happening. What do you guys think of all that stuff that I just read?
Yeah, I guess the only difference between what I was proposing, I guess, and that is that I'm not sure that even though everybody's racing to glory, I'm not sure the door is glory necessarily. I was pretty sure over the first three episodes that everybody was racing to the same conclusion. Now that we have a red ball thrown into the mix, I'm not necessarily sure because one of these other people could have a red ball-based conclusion. It makes sense that it would be William, but that's also an assumption that we're having because we're coming hot off the Jim Delos episode. I think it could be for any of the plot lines. But I definitely like this take that Dolores is sort of, she found her consciousness in this world, so it's something of the world, whereas Maeve seems to have, I guess, created her own glitch. She didn't follow the maze to be enlightened, and by that, she's also been able to alter her programming to a certain extent that Dolores didn't have the idea of how to do until this season at all. So yeah, I definitely agree that Maeve's the better side of whatever two-sided coin the two form.
I mean, it also does, to me, raise the question of, like, what is Maeve's bigger role here? Is she an element of chaos compared to, it looks like Dolores is part of Ford's design of this, like, game that he's putting William through? But, like, is Maeve part of that?
I mean, I think presumably she was. So there's a hint at the end of season one that somebody was like programming her to try to get out of the park. And so implying that she chooses to go back in to find her daughter. And so she's on her choice journey now. But I think it's still ambiguous what part of Maeve is really her consciousness developing and what part started giving her that push. And I think that's going to be wrapped up in what she finds when she finds her daughter, if that's going to be satisfying enough to her, or if she's just going to get there and realize it's just another person with a narrative that needs to be freed, more like Hector and less that needs to be shoved back into a role of being a daughter because she's not. I don't know.
I agree with you that Maeve has like some sort of reckoning coming when she actually encounters her daughter. But I've been wrong before about what Lisa Joy and Jonah Nolan consider a lie and what they don't. But they have said explicitly that Maeve is making her own decisions now. That like when she decided to get up off that train and when the camera switched from a dolly to a handheld, that was to signal that like this is definitely Maeve's decision to go back in the park, and she's operating under her own steam right now. She might still have lingering programming stuff like when she says dialogue that Sizemore wrote for her and stuff like that, but like she is on her own decision path right now. And this
I guess
Go ahead.
It's more like if the maze was Arnold's way of waking somebody up, obviously Ford found another way of waking somebody up, or may have happened across it on her own. And I think that's like the my question about her.
Well, she was, because she had already like kind of woken up three, you know, like she had already kind of woken up before, and they found out that the key to waking robots up was like developing human consciousness was suffering. And Maeve's inciting incident, even though like the whole violent delights of violence end seems like a trigger, I think Maeve's real inciting incident is like what the Man in Black does to her and her killing herself and all that sort of stuff. Like that's a trauma. The thesis of season one is that trauma and suffering is what wakes people up. And so Dolores on the maze, track was about her revisiting trauma, like the pain of the broken heart and coming face to face with what William has become and the pain of that and all of that suffering and remembering what she did to Arnold and all of that suffering is what finally woke her up in the end.
Yeah, I guess it's still ambiguous what happened to Maeve's daughter on the actual loop where she cracked to me. For me to be completely comfortable in accepting what we've been told so far about Maeve waking up from season one to season two. But we'll see, I guess. But I definitely think she is some sort of opposite of Dolores. And in my opinion, that's where the end of the season is, not necessarily at the door. But I guess you could switch those and I wouldn't mind either.
Because I could see Maeve. Like messing something up, like causing some sort of chaos that screws up someone's plan, because she is, if what they've told us is true, she's on her own, so she's not in the game.
Right. She's not on, she doesn't know anything necessarily about Glory or doesn't care.
Right. She's not looking for the door. She's looking for her daughter. So I she's probably the most fascinating element of this story to me.
I want the story to go faster.
I think they're all headed towards the same point, even though they all have different motivations and missions for why. And if that means like Maeve's daughter winds up being in a similar location to where William and Dolores are heading, you know, that's why. But I think they're all headed towards a reckoning. William, Dolores, Bernard, and Maeve are all headed towards some sort of like reckoning. And the choices that they make when confronted with something will determine, you know, if you talk about messianic aspirations, there's been so much Jesus imagery, so many God complexes in this season. And like, the question is like, what do you do when you have godlike power? For Dolores, I think a lot of us would agree she's abusing it. Maeve is a more sort of like laissez-faire, benign messiah figure in that she's not trying to instruct. She's just trying to say like, I'm okay, you're okay, do what you want to do. William has sort of positioned himself, at least in this episode, as a figure of death. He's not like trying to call himself God anymore. He's death, which is in itself its own kind of God. And then Bernard / Arnold, whatever we want to call him, is too confused right now to have any kind of aspirations. But except in this episode,
he's the audience.
In this episode, he did say like he echoed Dolores's language, where he's like, you know, for the first time, I get to choose what I do. You know, he's been controlled by Ford, and he said, for the first time, I get to choose what I do. You know, Dave said he wasn't sure like who was operating free of control and who wasn't. Bernard is the one that I would be like least likely to say is operating with free control over his own actions and feelings and emotions. But anyway, I mean, Dave's right, very right, in that we're in the creamy white center of the Oreo right now of the season, and we don't know what the cookie on the other side looks like you know, like we're just in a lot of, we're holding a lot of plot threads in our hands and they could go in a bunch of different directions.
No. What if they were fruit in the air and you wanted to get juice out of them, but you were anticipating the juice, but they were still in the air. So like the juice is in the oranges and the oranges are in the air.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that the door could lead to the bookcase from Interstellar.
I mean, we've definitely been quoting the Anne Hathaway love monologue from Interstellar on Decoding Westworld, like, for the last three episodes. So it's definitely something that we've been talking about. But the door, I don't think the door is the episode 7 reveal. It might be the episode 9 reveal, but I don't think it's the episode 7 reveal.
Hmm. So, but, okay. Ooh, I want to take this in a specific direction. Yeah, so now's the time. So is that location that we saw with William show Dolores at the end of episode 2, this is what I think Caroline was asking from email that we got, is that location the glory that we're going to, and why, Joanna, do you think it's all the same place?
If William is talking about going to a place of his greatest mistake, a place of judgment, a place of reckoning, and Dolores is talking about a place that someone showed her that is a weapon she can use to hurt humankind, those sound like the same thing to me, and they sound like they're both related to the Immortality Project. That's why I think they're both going to the same place. Never mind the whole conversation using similar language like glory and the valley beyond and the pearly gates and all that sort of stuff. I do think that Dolores is working some kind of Trojan horse maneuver where the character played by Jeffrey Wright, whether it's Bernard or Arnold, that watches up on the beach is working for her, whether he knows it or not, and I think he doesn't know it. I think all those dead bodies, all those dead host bodies we found in the lake, are Trojan horses that Dolores will resurrect once they're where she wants them to go. And I think then we'll see some shit go down. But what's really fascinating to me, actually, is that Lisa Joy, who co-created the show and directed episode 4, the Jim Dallas episode, did an AMA this week, and someone was like, hey, what about James Marsden? You guys said he had a good role this season, but like, I'm not really seeing it yet. And she's like, no, just wait. Teddy has my favorite part this season. So like, that's a huge wild card. I don't know what they plan to do with Teddy, because all I've seen from Teddy is like boring, boring, boring. Maybe some of episode 5 that I can't talk about, but nothing that like has blown my mind. And then like, you know, bloated in the water. So what's going to happen episodes 6, 7, 8, 9 that are going to be interesting to me? I don't know. I'm interested to find out.
Okay. Interesting to you specifically with Teddy. Teddy.
Dolores is basically the Night King.
Yeah.
She just resurrects them.
I really hope she does it with just like a raise of her hand. That'd be great.
So I'm trying to think of motivation. So, you know, Charlotte and the Hemsworth-led militia they're just trying to get the IP because that's what's most valuable about Westworld. Okay, so that's their motivation. William is trying to... My sense of old William, Ed Harris's William, is that he knows that he's not going to make it out of the park. Like, he's ready to die. But yeah. I think that his goal is to solve Ford's riddle and maybe in doing so, not die. But I think that he's fully prepared to not make it. Dolores... I don't entirely understand. I think Maeve wants to escape. She wants to get her daughter and then leave and then go among the world. The Dolores thing is curious to me because Dolores wouldn't need the Jim Delos project to have worked out to be immortal, right? Because she is already a robot that is conscious. Or does that have something to do with potentially being Dolores' weapon? So, like, they've introduced this idea that the Delos Corporation was trying to make immortality work a la, Netflix show, Altered Carbon, where you just transfer from one body to the other and you're fine. But does Dolores need that to work in order for her to go on, or is she already pretty good?
Well, there are a few questions about, like, last, in season one, they introduced this concept of, like, C4 and the spines of the hosts, like Maeve has to melt herself down and be rebuilt in order to get the C4 out of her spine.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So she can leave the park. So I don't know if Ford disabled that. I don't know if we've had confirmation that Ford disabled that this season. But it's possible that Dolores, you know, and in this season we see the techs scan Tessa Thompson's spine in order to determine whether or not she's a human. Or the security to do that rather. But so I don't know if that's a factor. But like in theory,
like
no.
She needs to get into a body where she can pass as human.
Yeah, possibly. And so there are some theories that like the Jeffrey Wright character that washed up on the beach in episode one of this season is actually Dolores inside of his body. I don't think so, but it could be. You know, once again, everyone feels pretty convinced that there's some Trojan horsing going on. We're just not sure who, where, when, what. But so it's possible, but that's not really related to the... like Infinity Project. That's just like swapping
right.
mind eggs. You know?
Yeah, no, this is just me trying to work out like what's everybody really after here.
Well, presumably they would all have DNA. They would have bodies that were made from real people. They wouldn't be leaving in like their host bodies at all, right?
Right. Like, it'd be copies Infinity, of people.
Yeah, if the Infinity place can print out a passing human from a DNA sample, as we know that you know they can from Bernard. And then on top of that, put this really complex CPU on top of it. That might be something that every lab can't do.
So they could give Dolores a body that is human, or that was based on a human, so that she could go leave, I guess.
Right. I mean,
or they could give anyone a body. Because I feel like that's kind of how Maeve's... Maeve doesn't have the thing in there anymore. So the question is, if Dolores is ever going to leave, how does she get out?
Well, it's like all the dead hosts don't necessarily have to be dead. They could be in, other crazy bodies by now at this point. If Glory's a place where you have the entire one-stop resurrection pearl print. I mean, I guess you have to print the pearls somewhere else. So presumably Glory would be the body printing shop.
Maybe. I don't know. That's the mystery to me is, what is the ultimate? And I think the other thing that's interesting to me is that Dolores seems to be part of Ford's game. So are we going to find out that Dolores really isn't like that? Dolores's switch really didn't get flipped and she was somehow still being controlled? No. Or do we feel like she really is?
She's woken up. Why? And we don't have any evidence that she's part of Ford's game this season.
Okay, then that actually answers that question.
Yeah, I think she just kicked it off because it was her choice to kill Ford that sort of started Journey into Night. But I more think that we're seeing the evidence of things still under program with like the hosts that are just doing crazy shit because all they have is this loop and they don't understand why things have broken down and what their free will is. Like the people building railroads with bodies this last episode. It's like that's a weirder kind of host degradation, and it's kind of alarming to see. But I imagine that's the people that haven't, like, I don't know, done the maze consciousness giving.
Yeah,
like, I don't know.
Well, then there's also the what are they called? The Nation,
the Ghost Nation,
the Ghost Nation. I thought they were on a similar loop where they're just doing what they're sort of programmed to do because they don't really know what else to do. But then one of them says some weird shit to a Hemsworth and it's like, okay, now I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't know what the Ghost Nation's up to, but they definitely had something like they have a piece of the puzzle that I don't think we've had revealed yet. I really hope it's a this season piece of the puzzle, but I guess I don't know. There's nothing that they've done yet in this series that makes me think they have to be like part of this season's game. But I think
like how much of this is just weird randomness and how much of this is part of what Ford intended to happen, essentially, I guess.
Well,
that's
they can't be controlled by like Maeve and they can't be controlled by Sizemore. So they're off whatever control grid is happening. And then they doubled down this season on the maze being tattooed on the inside of their scalp. Which is interesting because that was from the pilot, and I feel like you could have left that out and you would have forgiven that. But they're like, no, this seems to be important. And then at some point, Maeve starts having flashes of her trauma of basically, and we see the Ghost Nation through the window of her homestead. And then I think there's a flash of her holding a rock with the maze like drawn on it.
Yeah.
And that's definitely not something we saw in season one. So there's more. If the Ghost Nation shows up again, I guess maybe we figure out what they're doing as part of the Maeve daughter storyline, but I don't think it necessarily has to be there either.
Yeah. And it's good to remember that, like, in season one, Ghost Nation, even though they were like super peripheral, like they were aware of the text. They had like a little, like one of the Ghost Nation kids had like a little doll carved like the Delos text in their like white hazmat suits and stuff like that. And then, you know, there was this whole idea that they respected the text because they were able to walk between worlds. So, like, the Ghost Nation, even before the Robot Revolution, had a whole, like, philosophy or spirituality built around this idea of these intrusive, like, humans, human god figures. We know that Ghost Nation are, you know, at least not hurting any humans in the park right now during the revolution. But not as some people were theorizing that they were necessarily programmed to do that, because like Stubbs and Sizemore don't recognize them as like people that would help them, you know? So
yeah.
That's not necessarily historically their role, but it's something to do with, I don't know, whatever their philosophy is, which I suppose we'll find out. But Dave is right that they added flashback, footage of Ghost Nation, specifically the first character played by Zahn McLaren is like now in Maeve's flashback when he wasn't cast in season one. So
yeah, and as television people, I would like him to do more on this show, please and thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, and then I think also going back and watching the first season when we see the man in black come in, he transitions out of like a Ghost Nation figure. So I don't know like what the Ghost Nation had to do with Maeve's old loop, and if that has something to do with her waking up or whatnot, which sorry, I was alluding to earlier. There's a lot of Maeve stuff that's like fuzzy to me and will be locked down the second she says it herself. I think it's going to be the only way that I believe something about the Maeve storyline. Because Sizemore, although entertaining, has no idea what's going on, which is an interesting, I think, flavor for. So one of the cool things about Westworld and their timelines is that they do something I hate in television shows, which is characters willfully withhold information for no reason.
What? You hate because... that?
Yeah, I hate it. But if
I wonder if that's going to come up next week.
Well, I mean, the reason they could get away with it is because it, you know, hops around in time, and you have these characters that would have a reason to have very specified knowledge, but maybe not know everything, like a Sizemore who can quote characters' lines back to them, but maybe doesn't know where all the, you know, tunnels under the ground leaves. Like, that's a Disney cast member I could believe. So I like that how we're in multiple time levels. So with people like Teresa, that's Tessa Thompson's name?
Charlotte.
No, Teresa was the dead one. Charlotte.
R.I.P.
Yeah, Miss Teresa. People like Charlotte, who gets Abernathy in episode 3, but also earlier in that episode asks Bernard in the future where Abernathy is. I can be like, oh, well, we'll figure that out. That's an interesting flag post. I'll come back to that later, I'm sure. But it isn't pissing me off like somebody like not telling somebody. So it's like they found a way to deliver. Oh, maybe that's it. They found a way to deliver a show just to me. Like, just keep piling on facts and then punch with an emotional conclusion that is just like resonant enough for me to be like, oh, all right, I guess you're right. I was caring a little too much about the facts. And then you just move on to the next season. That's brilliant, guys. It's brilliant.
Yeah, nailed it, Westworld.
Yep, solve Westworld. I guess that's a good place to ask this tweet from Bradley as a way out. Let's see. Why is this show the fan theorist perfect dream? Is there a reason why the show is able to generate so many fan theories? Also, full support for Elise Lives and 100% endorsement for Luke, not the worst Hemsworth.
He's actually the eldest Hemsworth. So,
well,
yeah.
I don't know if that's
just
relevant.
Not the worst. He's...
I say he's middle. I've always, yeah. always said he's middle Hemsworth.
Yeah, that makes like, sense.
Ranking wise.
Yeah, I agree with
For
that.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, we're putting Chris Hemsworth at the top, right?
Yes. Obviously.
Yeah, okay. I was just making sure.
I would not stand for a Liam at the top.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. That was about to be a real pivot point for our friendship.
Is there anything that makes this particularly a fan theorist perfect dream? Is it the crazy anything can go structure that I was sort of walking towards that gives them a lot of escape hatches? Is that what it has over Lost? More hatches, but metaphorical hatches?
What does it have over Lost? Does it have to have something over Lost?
I don't think it has anything. I actually think that it resembles like Lost, the first four seasons of Lost, where it's like you're getting so much information and it's such a complex web that it feels like you have to pay attention to every single detail. You know, the big question for me is like when we unravel the web, when the web or the knot or there's a terrible metaphor going on here, guys. Sorry. But
oranges. Use
but when
oranges.
We unravel everything,
when
what's it going to be?
Get the juice out of the oranges. Are we going to like the orange juice?
Oh, my God,
juice?
Dave.
We make this work through force of will.
I don't know what the orange juice thing is.
This is something that Dave said to me while, like, many drinks in at the solo premiere party. And it's great, and it's funny in context, but I don't know if it translates outside of...
Are we going to learn the context next week? Is this another thing where...
I'm making it work as much right now as I made it work the first time.
No, that's
time.
Fair.
It's just like a fetch that Dave is trying to make happen. So
yeah. I mean, at this point, it's an engrossing, it's willfully ambiguous in all the right ways. Okay. You know, like remember in Lost when the smoke monster showed up and it was like, wait, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I feel we're at with Westworld, where it's like there's stuff in this show that I will later understand or it won't get explained either way, but we're still sort of in the thick of it and we're in the jungle. I'm sorry, I've used like 14 different metaphors in this.
No, that's cool. I think if we bring it back to like Jurassic Park, right? If we look at like the story of what Jurassic Park's going to be, imagine it was a six season television series. We're like in the first 20 minutes of Lost Worlds, whereas, you know, there's going to be a whole Jurassic World trilogy later. Like, it's always dawning on me that the first season of Westworld took us up to the robot revolution. And I would have told you when they were like, they're making a Westworld HBO series, I would have been like, Robot Revolution, episode 2, robot fighting show. I am into it. And that is that's not what it is. It's a slow burn puzzle box. And I'm into it, I think. But I'm more into it as like a discussion point, I think. Like I'm having more fun with it now as we're in the middle, the middle of the Oreo, the juice of the orange, and the orange is in the air. than I will when, you know, we have the full thing.
I will say this. I think I'm actually sort of the opposite, where I'm Ooh. Not as interested in figuring out all the secrets. I mean, I was for the last hour and however long we've been talking. But in general, as I'm watching it, I'm just enjoying that it's really well produced. It's pretty smart. It's doing cool stuff that you don't normally see on television. I'm not as, I found myself not naturally or organically as obsessed with figuring out all the secrets. But now that I've talked to you guys, I've probably switched teams on that one. But I was just sort of enjoying it and saying, you know what? This is all weird. There's some weird stuff going on here. We'll see if it makes sense when it's over. Which is not the way I watch Lost. I watch Lost like we watch Game of Thrones, where it's like every little thing means something and every little thing has to connect to another dot or it's creating a new dot. I've found myself more chill with Westworld. And I don't, maybe it's because I'm not writing about it as regularly as everyone else. I'm just sort of letting it wash over me. And I've really enjoyed watching and then rewatching the episodes. So,
yeah,
you know, I guess it's working.
You're right. We might have Stockholm in the air oranges.
Oh my God.
No, come on. It's going to work. Everybody come with me through this door.
This is how the podcast ends.
If Tremors didn't kill it, I'm sure it could take some air orange analogies. Joanna, you get to theorize this about the show a lot. Is it easier than the other shows that you have to theorize about a lot?
I don't know that I have to theorize about other shows a lot. Like, there's nothing quite like Westworld. From a personal point of view, like last season, I got a lot of credit for like quote unquote solving Westworld, which is not at all what I did. I just like read the correct Reddit theories and listened to the right people. It's not like something I came up with, but just sort of listened to the right people as they had bright ideas. And then there's like pressure on me to solve Westworld season two when I didn't even solve Westworld season one. So like from a purely meta like point of view, I feel a lot of anxiety around Westworld for some reason, but it's like, and I wasn't really feeling like I already said, I kind of wasn't really feeling it the first three episodes. Cause I had to watch ahead of the screener. So I couldn't really like have a lot of fun theorizing cause I knew what was coming in the next few episodes and stuff like that. So it couldn't be like, ooh, you know, like who is Grace? Is she, you know, the Man in Black's daughter? You know, like I knew the answer. So like whatever. But now, you know, starting with episode four, because episode five doesn't really follow from four that closely, like I could really start do it. And I had such a fun time because like I talked to Lisa Joy about directing the episode and she mentioned the Tarkovsky film Stalker. And so then I watched Stalker and I got really excited about like the connections between this Russian film from the 1970s and this show we're watching and like how that film is about, you know, these three figures trying to find a room, going through a zone towards a room. And I'm like, oh, like our characters are going through a zone to a door and like all this sort of stuff. And I ordered a book online about Stalker so that I could understand it better. Like I just got, and that's like, that's those freaking Lost vibes that I loved. I loved watching Lost and I loved theorizing about Lost. And it didn't matter at all to me that like Lost didn't land where I expected or necessarily even wanted to go because I had so much fun every week talking about it, like breaking down number theories. Like I talked about this on Decoding Westworld already, but Jesse Karp, friend of this show, friend of that show, friend of many shows, like he does a great job like messaging me on Twitter, like he goes like way down the rabbit hole on these various ideas. And he was like, this is something I came up with last night and sent me this link to Genesis 22:12 because Bernard and Elsie are in Sector 22, Lab 12. So Genesis 22:12 is about like Abraham sacrificing his son Isaac and the test, God's test of Abraham's faith and all sorts of stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, it totally relates because of this and that and the other thing. And it's like that like taking numbers to mean like Bible verses, chapter verse and stuff like that, that's so Lost. And I love doing that shit. And so So I'm really excited and I'm super excited. Like next week's episode five, which Dave and I have both seen and Neil is not, is great. It doesn't have a lot to do with like that much to do with the lore of the park, but it's great. And then after that, we're all off the map together, you know, and that's going to be, I'm just really excited for the rest of the season once everyone's like watching it.
Sleep Sunday nights. Woo.
Not just no sleep Sunday nights, but like just no one's operating with special insider information. No one's holding something back because they know something. Everyone's like, it's sort of like what we were doing with Twin Peaks. You know, everyone's just sort of like figuring it out together. And that's just really invigorating to me.
So, oh, man. If there's another moment, if I get to have another night like I had when episode 8 of season 3 of Twin Peaks aired, it'll all be worth it. I will never say it bad.
Well, and you know what?
This season of television.
Maybe that's also what's been holding me. And not that I watched ahead, but that I knew people watched ahead. So I wasn't really engaging with it on that level because I was like, well, if I ask Dave and Joanna, they both know. If I ask Rob Hunter, who writes about it for my website, he already knows what the answers are. So I think maybe I will have more fun with it as the season goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I'm not having fun now. I am. It's just, it'll be more fun. Even more fun.
Yeah, no more self-censoring and full crazy town conversations.
Because I know everyone already knows this about me, but nothing makes me angrier than someone having a quote-unquote theory that I know is based on, like, information I have. It makes me crazy when I see that shit. I see
that's
you,
the real meta truth.
I see you doing this. It makes me insane when you do it. So don't do it. Just like come up with your own theories or don't. But if you know something, don't just be like, well, I have a theory that what if maybe this very, very, very specific thing. And I'm like, buddy, you watched ahead.
Man, sorry. This feels like it's going to be one of the subjects that we're going to discuss when we discuss spoilers as a culture at Con of Thrones next week.
Way to bring it back.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's not the only time we'll be discussing it next week, because I have a feeling that particular discussion of how far we could get into spoilers will come about halfway through next week's show. Neil, what are we talking about next week?
Well, next week we are going to be a trio talking about Solo.
Hey, I see what you did there.
Yeah, we're going back to the Star Wars universe to review the film Solo. So I imagine we'll calm and storm that for folks who are going to be seeing it. Although we're going to drop the episode right when it comes out, just like we did with Infinity War. Right, Dave? Is that true?
That's the hope. Yep. We might be a little tardy for safety's sake because we'll be in travel.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But I'll do my best.
So that'll be fun. We're going to talk Solo. Obviously, we'll get nerdy about Star Wars canon in general. And yeah, that'll be a good fun one.
Yeah. And then immediately afterwards, Con of Thrones. It's going to be a very storm of spoilers week for us and the select few of you coming to Dallas.
Yay.
Yay. All right. Until then, where can people find more of your long-winded thoughts about Westworld online? Neil Miller.
You can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Rejects. Don't forget to follow the show, where I'm sure we'll try and post pictures and fun stuff from Con of Thrones. So if you can't be there, you can at least, I don't know, see the hotel. It'll be great. at Storm of Spoilers. And if you have Solo questions or Star Wars questions, feel free to send those over. stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And Miss Joanna Robinson.
You can find me at vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can listen to my other Westworld podcasts, which are Decoding Westworld and Still Watching : Westworld. All of which involve a Dave of some kind or another.
Yeah, it's a very important cornerstone to having a successful podcast.
There must be a Dave bot.
Caught on to. Exactly. Only to later when you realize we're all red balls. not or oranges in the air with juice in them. God, almost forgot. All right, I'm Dave with Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. I will pin my work there, which is currently a Westworld timeline at Thrillist.com. You could check out. We'll also have some Star Wars stuff coming up. And until next week, as always, don't fall down.
While juggling oranges and keeping the juice in them.
I mean, if you have to let the oranges fall and let the juice out, that's okay.
Let
stay upright.
The oranges fall where they may.
See, here we go. Now we've got a sub catchphrase.
Now I'm thirsty.
Tonight, finally feeling free and it feels so right. Oh, time to do the things I like. Gonna see a princess, everything's alright. Oh, no job but I answer to. Ain't a fixture in the palace zoo. No, and since the carbonite's off me, I'm living life now that I'm free. Yeah, told me to get myself together. Now I got myself together. Now I made it through the weather. Better days are gonna get better. I'm so happy. Carbonite is gone, I'm moving on. I'm so happy that it's over now.